The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
This is a story about a podcast that I want to do with Scott and CJ.
We're doing it.
Here we are. And right. Almost end of season three.
I know.
That's why. I know. It's almost the end of season three.
We've got a long time. We've got several episodes to go before we get there. Right. We got the Shakespeare's. We've got.
Gonna miss you, is all I'm saying.
Kurt and Kyle.
You're going to miss us because you're having a baby. You're going to miss us because...
You're going to miss me.
That's true. Oh, so interesting thing I got into on Twitter yesterday while Twitter is melting down and becoming a hellscape of...
It's been kind of funny at the same time,
it's
too.
It's funny though. And gross.
Yeah.
But I guess some theater company in London announced that they were doing... Or England, I should say. I think it's England. Announced that they're doing a new R&J... with a Nazi Romeo and a Jewish Juliet. And what? So I replied, I don't know if this is good timing with the recent surge in anti-Semitism. Also, neither the Capulets nor the Montagues are intrinsically evil. They're
right.
You're like the power dynamic would fuck that up and make a conceptual nightmare. And
are they're trying to make him like Rolf in Sound of Music, where we're like, but I care, and it's like, no, he's still a Nazi.
Yeah, he's still a fucking Nazi.
Because think about how everything plays out. Think about, you know, Mercutio and all of that, and who you're rooting for, and who's saying smart things. It's smart, like all of a sudden you got Nazis saying things that are fucked up.
That's interesting. Yeah, a couple years ago, I worked on an R&J where they were trying to make it like conservative versus liberal, like, but the Capulets were the MAGAs. And the only time they got any of that in was at the very beginning, because after that, there isn't much.
No, it's, you know, it's
that you can fit all that stuff into, unless he's literally just walking around with a Nazi armband on the whole time. Years ago, Theatricum up in Topanga did an R&J that was, I think they did, and I don't know the exact years, but it was Islam and Judaism, like at the wall. So, but I didn't see it. I think
Shakespeare's all about recontextualizing. I think that's fine, but I just felt that concept was A, in poor taste given just the past couple of weeks, and B, now, well, now that's a whole nother discussion, but
Let's go.
Well, I was just going to say, if you're in England, you might not have been as impacted by Yee's anti-Semitic remarks and the surge that came because of that. You might be aware of it, you know, as an internet thing, but not necessarily on a, you know.
And the shit going on the 405 now.
Yeah, right. Like, but England's got its own fucking problems with anti-Semitism, like any place has its own problems with anti-Semitism.
I just would want to know what the why is, because right now I can't find one. But it's you know, maybe the director has a take, and I don't know, we'll stay abreast of that situation, and we'll let you know, listeners. How are you? It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
We're finally recording again on a
we're
our
back
normal
on
evening.
Schedule.
We've been doing these like early morning, and I do kind of want to apologize. I feel like our last two episodes we've been a little lethargic, and I know a lot of people love Stoppard, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know.
But
I'm not apologizing for shit.
Goddamn, CJ, she's not going to do it. She's not backing down. Fists are up.
Wow. The vein in her forehead is popping.
Do I have a vein?
No.
I just have a fat wrinkle in my forehead.
Your eyes are bleeding, though.
They are.
Tears.
Invite
blood.
Me in, quick.
CJ has a knife. Stop. Stop. No, but hey, that was a bit of radio theater for y'all.
Yeah.
We just need our Foley artists now.
Yeah. Oh, here, I'll edit some in.
Shing.
Yeah.
Shing.
I'll use that as the cue later.
Gross.
Thanks.
Gross.
Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And each week we get together to discuss, debate, and disseminate the evolutions of the great playwrights by taking a macro look at three of their plays. And this is part three. This is the finale. This is three of three of our miniseries covering the works of Tom Stop. Bird. Did y'all hear Pam's song last week?
Oh, yeah, we did.
That's right. It's Rosenpod and Gildencast are dead.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
We've already covered Rosenpod and, no, Rosencrantz and, well, you fucked me up. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. And we covered Arcadia, which was an interesting episode. We got into it a little bit in a positive, healthy way because we still love each other.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to come back out a little bit today because at the end we are going to have to rank shit. And so we'll get there. This week, we're covering a play I had never heard of.
Hmm.
And I think that's for a reason, and we'll talk about it.
Oh, really? You'd never even heard of it?
I had never even heard of it.
Okay.
And we'll get into why. I think there's a reason for that, actually. But it's called Rock and Roll.
Rock and Roll.
Rock and Roll.
Like in and out.
Like in stuff.
Yes.
Like theater and stuff.
Stuff. Yes. Yeah.
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 Those are our
Stopper bones. Got it from us.
Yes.
He stole it from us. Yeah, Rock and Roll. Okay, give me some first thoughts, y'all. Like I said, I didn't know this one, so go for it. Let's start with Scott.
It was my pick, and literally...
Exactly, right. That's why sorry, yes.
Right. I just had remembered when it came out that there was sort of a buzz around it, and then I found out some of the subject matter or some of the references that were in it in terms of the music and all that. And I'm like, but I'd never gotten around to reading it and I'd never gotten around to seeing it. So I was aware of it and knew vaguely what it was about, that it was semi-autobiographical and or inspired by his life, Mr. Stoppard's life. Yeah, but I had never read it and sat down and I cranked it out in one sitting. So
it's quick. It's a quick read. Siege, first thoughts.
I got through this much easier than the other two scripts. Yeah. I enjoyed some of the relationships in it quite a bit. Definitely had a lot of looking up of things that I had to do. It is a time. It is a political thing that I'm not familiar with.
Same.
Which I don't have anything against looking things up. I learned a lot. I felt like he had really figured something out about himself, whereas, like, I was surprised to find out that he was Czech. I didn't know. I didn't, because I just thought he was the most British playwright that ever Britished.
No, isn't that funny? And, I did for years as well. Like, it wasn't until, like, 2000 that I became.
Right. Changes and, will get ya.
Well, yeah. And in this, you can see him dealing with it and being open about it. Not that he wasn't open about it, but just writing about it and could obviously see that it was pretty autobiographical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and not even autobiographical. Well, we'll get into it. But it's not even necessarily autobiographical as much as it's, like, an alternate
inspired by
reality. Oh, he could have lived.
Yeah, autobiographical.
It's like an alter
right
ego
word.
He might have been and wasn't. But yes. I love that about it. I'm sorry. Okay.
What no, you're right. You're right.
But I think that's what you're. Yeah, it's part of the beauty of it. I read this early on because Arcadia was difficult for me to read. Having even seen it was just hard for me to keep reading and stay interested, and it just was a longer read. That was just me.
Mm-hmm.
RNG, I've read like 9,000 times. I've been in it. I read that. I cracked that out like a mofo. Like, I was just like, oh, yeah. And I just... Because I also, like, with things like that, once I know the scene, it's sort of like when I read Angels in America every couple years, I just pick it up and I'm like, yeah, this scene. And I read it, but I don't, like, engage deeply.
Well, you know
so,
it already.
Yeah, so RNG, I just knew too well. So That was an easy read. This one was just so easy. It was really fun. It was really quick. I kind of likened it to Sanctuary City in structure, which I had just seen and was inspired by. So I was like, oh, and I just got passionate while reading it. So it was very fun to read. Not very stoppered at all, in my opinion. And we'll get to that discussion as well. Like, it's just so different than anything else stoppered that I've dealt with. But I don't know what this play's about. I always say that. I want to be clear, listener. I know what this play is about, but it's fun to hear this other side of it, this other take. Usually it has some opinionated pricks in it. I shouldn't say pricks, spikes.
Spikes.
Little spikies in it.
Did you call CJ a prick? Dude.
No. Like, sometimes it has little spikes. Sometimes it has warm fuzzies about the play. Like, you can tell a little bit about CJ's opinion about the play when she gives this. But that's why we like it. And here it is.
CJ's breakdown.
I don't know if this is going to help y'all out much, but Rock and Roll tells a story of political upheaval, social unrest, and forever changes from the late 1960s through 1990 in Cambridge and Prague, from the views and lives of intellectuals, members of the British Communist Party, Czech developing dissidents, and indirectly, musicians both wildly famous and deeply underground. The big ideas are interspersed with the personal lives of these individuals, how they transform over time, love, lose, and eventually come back together to discover where everyone stands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty great. I mean, I think I will start off by disagreeing with you just a little bit, Bailey. I think I understand what you mean when you say it's the least stoppered of it, but I think it's still very much stoppered. He's stuffing it with ideas. He's overlapping ideas. There's not necessarily a definitive answer to a lot of questions that he poses or a lot of circumstances that he presents.
I think that's true.
But I did feel...
I think on an academic level, it's not as stoppery as the other two, is more what I'm saying. Because emotionally, he's always emotional. I mean, even RNG, we talked about, you know, it has a sorrow and it has, you know what I mean? It's still stoppered. You're right. I mean is I didn't feel like I was in a classroom.
It didn't have, well, and it also doesn't, it's felt like the least theatrical to me.
Yes.
In terms of there's RNG and there's RNG and the meta theatrics of it. And so it's very much theater.
Sure.
Arcadia has the two timelines overlapping and going back and forth, and that in a single location, and that felt very theatrical. This I felt like, oh, this could have been a film just as easily as a piece of theater, and I'm not dismissing it as a piece of theater, just overtly it seemed the least theatrical to me.
And may I pitch something?
Because
I feel like this discussion has come up as we've been talking about the stoppered that I kind of kept coming back to, and I'm saying it's the same in some ways, but not other ways. It reminded me a lot of Nottage's Sweat. It's a specific time. It's a specific chunk of history, and you're watching things happen in real time, but then you're also watching how individuals are affected by it and how they change over time because of it.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotcha. So, you know, it's this, the political and cultural legacy of the late 60s.
The Prague Spring, which I didn't really even know anything about. So
I knew about it because I had seen, and he references this in the intro to the copy of the play that I have, but he names the character Jan.
Right.
After the character in Unbearable Lightness of Being, which was played by Daniel Day-Lewis in the movie, but that all takes place during the Prague Spring.
Right, and I was very into The Who, as we know, when I was in high school, and before that, and then after, but I really, in high school is when I did a lot of my digging in with that, and I found this movie, Quadrophenia. which is a movie that is not a musical film, but it's, you know, it's like 64, 65, the mod sort of, like, you know, I don't know, like, era of, you know, and it British unrest and class shit is going on and, like, all, you know, you get it. But so while doing my sort of research into that as just like a young, passionate kid, I found a lot of this kind of stuff come up, but I wasn't, I didn't know as much as now I do after doing all this research from reading this play, because it interested me a lot. Especially I had never heard of that, the band, the people,
the plastic people,
plastic people
of the universe.
Yeah. I had never heard of them.
I had neither. Yeah. I was, had a good time looking them up.
It's a real band.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had been exposed to them, back in my, 90s college radio days when I did a little spinning, a little DJing, they had come up, and they're all often talked about, in relation to Pink Floyd and that sort of thing, which was, that was kind of the biggest turn on for me in this, was that I got all those Syd Barrett and Pink Floyd references and what was going on. And
well, the Syd Barrett stuff is crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And, you talk about it.
Well, I was just going to say, so the first thing that popped up is the first image you see is the Piper.
Yeah.
Is described as the Piper, which you find out later was Syd Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
And Pink Floyd's first album was titled Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of Pan illusions in that, to the god Pan and to the Bohemia.
And my cat.
And your cat. And
cat Pan,
And so that, like, piqued my thing because I was such a Pink Floyd fan. And the story of Syd Barrett, I also think, is kind of a metaphor for everything that's going on. The sort of decline, the sort of breaking down of a mind, of a talent, and all that, as everybody's sort of lives are broken down, their ideologies are broken down, and as time just sort of is a big wave that fucks with all of their perceptions of the reality.
Time is also a circle, and politics are a circle, and the news cycle is a circle. Like, it was kind of another thing that got me bummed out while reading it.
That's just so what the play is, right? And we're doing this progression from 68 or so.
Yeah, 68 to 90.
To 90?
Yeah.
To my birth year, right? Like, that's a pretty hardcore amount of... No, but it's just crazy to think about that amount of history in that little amount of time, especially in Europe and America. Everywhere, obviously, everywhere.
And we're still feeling that too.
In terms
that
of
change
rock and roll.
We talk about the rock and roll revolution, and you know, it gets kind of, you know, dismissed, but it did change the world. Like, you know, I've had conversations with my folks about that, and they were like, the difference between 1961, which was right before the Beatles hit, and 1969 when they broke up, that period of time was decades pushed into a single decade. Decades of social change and everybody got caught up in it in really cool ways.
And emotionally, the play, the characters, which we could get into in a second, I think they really follow that pattern, right? It's a shifting of pain and then forgiveness and hurt and forgiveness and denial. And we were just sort of in that turmoil, right? We were just in this clusterfuck of it all. And I think I like that about the play, and I like that it's not so on the nose, but it's all there. But we're doing these quick vignettes, and I brought up Sanctuary City earlier, and it's a play that the first act is like no bit of dialogue is longer than 10 seconds, maybe 30 seconds when it's long, right? But it's just going go 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 go, and you're like, what is happening? And then the second act is all one big scene that ties it all together. Fuck, and it rules.
The dinner,
it's that kind of thing. So I like that this sort of follows that pattern, but it never really lets up except to give you these rock numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, by the way, when...
Go Go ahead. I was just saying they're so specific. Like,
yeah.
So specific. Like, we're going to, it's this track. It starts at 30 seconds.
Exactly.
Right.
And like, you know.
And the way it's done is there's a drop. Well, it's how you're meant to do it is there's a drop in the back and they project the credits of the song as it's playing. So that you see, like, who created this song? Who is this that you're hearing right now? Who are the people involved in making that thing?
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. I don't know any Czech rock bands. I thought I did. I was looking up names. I was like, oh, I don't know any of them.
No, I don't know
any of them, unfortunately. But apparently in the Prague production, they did a huge, long run of this at their national theater. And for the entire run, apparently, Plastic People of the Universe opened and closed the show.
Oh, my God.
That's radical.
Oh, my God. That's so rad.
Yeah, pretty cool. But, you know, you get a lot of Rolling Stones in here. You get a lot of Velvet Underground, Pink Floyd, all that kind of shit. Like, it's stuff that we kind of know, even if you don't know it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like I said, some interesting picks. And the way that... And again, in the intro to the copy that I have, he thanks a lot of people. Mick Jagger was there at opening night of the show, and I guess owns the
NBD.
Film rights.
Yeah,
he did extensive interviews with David Gilmour, who now is kind of the front man of Pink Floyd. There's a whole history there that goes on, but how that band recreated themselves. They lost their front man. They lost their star. And everybody was like, what are you going to do? And they just literally just reinvented themselves. They figured it out and were able to keep the band going. But that story is still so sad and interesting. And then the other songs that he drops in, like the Guns N' Roses at the end.
Yeah, that's fun. And some American Dylan stuff. Like, why not? Yeah. We love that. There's also poetry as a motif throughout
Sapphos.
The thing.
Oh my God.
They use Sapphos, and they use
which I know
Plutarch.
Nothing about.
There's
Sapphos.
A Plutarch one at the end.
Plutarch, yeah.
But
yeah, Sapphos is like a whole thing to get into.
Yeah, he's using him. This is a quote I found about it because I was like, what is that about? But so apparently it's this motif used as a pagan sensualism. Mm-hmm. Implicitly compared with the anarchic erotic force of rock music.
Oh,
like, oh shit. Okay. Like, yeah, I don't know about that, but it sounds good. But then one other like Easter egg that I think is worth shouting out. And then I think we should talk characters a little bit before we get into like OG production. But, one of the characters, a Czech writer named Ferdinand, right? So that's an homage to Vaclav Havel. And Havel, who is a friend of Stoppard's, who also came to opening night, and he wrote three plays with a protagonist named Ferdinand Vanek, and it was a stand-in for Havel himself, and these plays were distributed and became a symbol of the resistance. So they were distributed by the Simstadt.
Right.
And became like an actual like resistance piece of theater. And he was a friend of Stoppard's.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fucking sick.
Cool people just hanging out with one another just in the same circles.
Yeah. And then a bunch of his friends, like as like a continuation, they were like, let's make him Tintin. Let's make him fucking Spider-Man. Let's make him like a franchise. So they, a bunch of people have written all these Ferdinand Vanek plays and stuff. And Stoppard was like, I'm gonna do it as well. I'm gonna put him in my play. Why not? So that's fun. Anyway, cute.
Yeah, no, it was a cool story. Yeah.
Cute.
Yeah. All these characters are interesting. I do think that he has like one or two too many characters in it that don't get a lot of time. So like it's like when
they
Nigel
talk about
comes,
double and triple casting in the top of the script too.
Yeah, which I would, it feels like Henry the Sixth Part Two, where I'm just like, stop introducing new people. There's like three people named Somerset and four people named Suffolk, and they keep dying. And so every time a new one comes on, you're like, I guess this is a new one, but it doesn't really
explain. Tracking grid out. It's like,
no,
okay,
we have
one.
It's insane. No, exactly. You should see all of our fucking spreadsheets.
Change your costume.
Spreadsheets galore.
But I did think that one of the other things I noticed is that it's also very much a play about aging.
Yes.
About getting older and generations. I think that that's why they do that. The casting with Esme and Alice that they basically switch in the second act. You know,
she pulls a dot, figure. But backwards.
Yeah, right.
From Sunday in the Park.
You get it.
Well, it's not backwards. It's the same. It's just she's old. You get it.
I get it. But it was just speaking to CJ's point earlier about sort of cycles that these people that. You know, families cycle through and the dynamics of what that hierarchy is often changes over time, you know, but I agree.
CJ, who's your favorite character?
I loved Eleanor, and I loved her relationship with Max. Like, I think that was the thing that drew me into the play the most, was her getting sick and dying of cancer and watching them deal with it as a couple. And then just the whole idea of, like, you know, her dealing with the horrible things she's having to deal with her body and the surgery she's had and not necessarily handling it, quote unquote, gracefully, making jokes about it, being morbid about it. And it's, to me, it was just so human. And their love, even though Max is kind of this grouchy, unflinching butthead, like,
oh, it's very that she clear was that his he
soft
loves,
spot. Yeah. And like, I kind of love their whole relationship. I kind of dug her too, because, you know, even as she's like dying of cancer, she's still teaching. And I love that they're both these like intellectual professors at Cambridge, and I just really dug their relationship a lot. I loved Eleanor, and I loved Esme too.
Eleanor has that line where she's my body is not me.
Yeah.
My body is nothing without me. Yeah.
And it just knocked me on my ass, and I think
because she's just had so much done to her. She's had. Yeah. Okay.
How brutal all that is, and you know. But then again, we get back to the cycle that they move on. That he finds another person in Lenka.
What a hot chick name.
Is a hot chick name.
I may have missed this, and you can correct me. Is that played by the same actress in Act One and Act Two?
It's meant to
be. So does she span that 20 years?
I think so. Okay. I didn't clock that being different. I just assumed it was like come out and...
Because that's the other thing is like just on a technical level, aging all those people over time, like what changes, what doesn't change.
I wonder if it's as simple as costume and physicality, you know?
Sure. I mean,
or
there's
if they
the whole...
go as deep as...
Well, they do the whole conversation. I think they wore wigs.
Wings?
I think Jan wears a wig early on and then gets his hair cut.
Oh, yeah. He's very specific about hairstyles. The way people are like three dots mean a pause, ellipses overshadow. And with him, it's like their hair needs to be this for these scenes and then this for these scenes. And then
Stoppard. I thought you meant Jan because Jan talks about it too. But yes, Stoppard is very specific about it.
I mean, last thing I wanted to say about Eleanor and Max, I think it's the other thing that I appreciated about this play is while there's all these big ideas going on and these massive worldwide events happening, people are still having to live their lives, which is also the point of all this shit that ever goes on. You have wars, you have political craziness, but, you know, people still have big things happening in their lives. And the fact that they're even still taking time to be involved with this stuff, even though they're dealing with some of the heaviest life events ever.
Right.
You know,
you still gotta wipe your ass at the end of the day. Yeah.
Max is a butthead, but I admire him.
What about you, Bales?
I don't know. I was just thinking about that. And again, you're kind of right, Sky. There's a bit too many characters up in here. But I do like Jan.
Oh, yeah.
I do. And I'm, you know.
Who is clearly Stoppard, right?
Yeah, so we can talk about that for a second. Stoppard's take is Jan is a man who Stoppard would have been if he had moved back to his homeland. He's like, I think if I had grown up in that circumstance with that going on at that time, I absolutely would have been this guy. And that's what I'm writing. So it is him, but it's him in a circumstance he didn't actually.
Well, and the thing,
I mean, he lived through it, but he wasn't in the place. Yeah.
The thing that made me think that Stoppard was Jan was Jan's quote, "To be English would be my luck," and I'm like, oh.
yeah, absolutely that though. It was originated by Rufus Sewell, who most people
underrated
would,
actor.
Oh, he's fantastic!
He's a really good actor.
I think most people. I'm just trying to think of like major films he's in. Most people would probably know him from The Holiday. Mm. He's
Dark City,
Knight's Tale, The Father. He's in The Father that came out recently. He's the son and the father, and he's in Old, which was bad. He's in Hamlet.
He was Fortinbras in Hamlet.
That's right.
Oh, but yeah. Like the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet, which
Have you seen The Holiday, CJ?
I don't think so.
Cameron Diaz, Kate Winslet, Jack Nicholson, Jude Law movie, Nancy Myers.
Or if I have, it's been a while.
That's okay. Well, he's in that. He's the one that is engaged but still trying to fuck Kate Winslet or whatever.
Cute.
She's like he's like her boss at the paper. I don't remember. Anyway, I thought that was gonna land better. With CJ. He's also in Parade's End, which was the Stoppard BBC thing with Benedict Cumberbatch that we had talked about. He was also he originated Septimus Hodge in Arcadia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But he's interesting. I think he's more recently been in like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Man in the High Castle. Those are the things he's been more noticed for recently. He's playing like a hardcore Nazi in Man in the High Castle, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Or maybe the opposite. I don't know. I never watched that.
I tried and then couldn't get into it.
But then you have Brian Cox played Max.
Yeah.
The
original Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Mine? Eater,
Manhunter.
It's called Manhunter. Yeah. Mind Eater.
Mind Eater. Right.
Yeah,
wow, we just made $1 million. I'm taking notes now.
That's
Mind Eater.
That's the one directed by Mann? Michael Mann.
Yeah, Michael Mann. Oh, it's pretty
it's
good
okay.
though.
It's yeah, it's good. Okay. It's not Silence of the Lambs.
It's not Silence of the Lambs.
But it's good. Fuck. What were we just Brian Cox. I love Brian Cox. Do you guys watch Succession?
Yeah.
No, it's on my fucking list though. I gotta see it.
CJ, it's all about it's like the worst people just watching the worst people ever be the worst people ever, and I love it. He's Agamemnon in Troy, remember?
Oh yeah, he's also the bad guy in one of the X-Men.
He's Stryker in X2.
That's where
he gets recast in the later ones, but
yeah.
Brian Cox been around for a long time. He's also the voice
Super
of
Troopers.
McDonald's now.
Oh, is that right?
Really?
Yeah.
If you listen to the guy who talks about nice golden French fries, that's
I haven't seen a McDonald's commercial in a while. They don't advertise on TLC. When I'm watching 90 Day Fiance. Deadpan looks from both guys.
I was gonna bring this up. Digression. I'm watching Cobra Kai, which is awful.
My brother edits that show.
Does it? He hates it too.
Don't
oh,
worry.
You
it's,
don't yeah. like it? A lot of people love
The first.
It.
The first two seasons were really charming, and the nostalgia trip. Now it's in season 5, and it's like. It's just like there's psychopaths going after karate schools. It's just gotten weird. But there's a scene where one of the characters is caught watching 90 Day Fiance and he's crying. And anyway, digression.
I was watching it before I got on here with y'all.
Remember Super Troopers?
Watched that show and I did not like it at all.
It's not a show, it's a movie.
I watched it with a bunch of dudes that are like, this is the funniest thing ever, CJ. And I was like, it's just fart jokes and dumb dudes doing dumb dude stuff.
Anyway, he's the captain in it. I was trying to just pull like a very random thing, but
yeah.
We'll make it CJ's I Hate Men corner next time. Okay,
we got
friends.
A stinger for that.
Yes.
Here it goes. CJ hates men.
It's true.
It's true.
Ding.
Okay. We've spent enough time. He's in Rob Roy. Okay. What else? Who else?
Well, Sinead Cusack. Yeah. Of course,
Dynasty, not the Cusacks.
No.
Not the John and Jones. But
no.
Joan.
The other ones.
Yeah. Yes.
That was actually, it's kind of funny. I grew up with two families that were Cusick and Cusack. And we were, and there was this like little bit of like, we'd get them confused a lot. Anyway.
But yeah, she's been around for.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. No, you're welcome.
Yeah, good engagement. Good engagement.
It's going great.
Great banter. Great banter. Keep going. Yeah. Do you have anything to say about Sinead?
Just that she's awesome. She's been around forever, and she got a Tony nom for it for this for supporting actress. And yeah, I mean, she's just one of those legends that just keeps, you know, pounding the board, so to speak.
I have a production question. Mm-hmm. How has this show done? How has it been received? How has it been produced in comparison to productions of his that I think are, in my opinion, more widely known, like RNG and Arcadia?
I think it just had a revival recently, but like they do it. I mean, it's done around a lot, you know, especially in bigger regional theaters. Like there's a big Chicago production like in 2015.
Cause I too was something. Unaware of this script, but I did know the other two coming into working on Stoppard. So I was just curious.
This also followed like the Coast of Utopia, which was, you know, a sort of huge three play thing. And it was, you know, a smaller thing that kind of got wedged in between.
Okay.
So yeah.
Like,
so
like Lee's Clockers.
When it premiered, it was kind of rad. It had a
Yeah.
There's some pretty cool people there. You already mentioned Mick Jagger was there, which is rad. His friend Vaclav Havel, the resistance playwright, was there. First president of the post-communist Czech Republic and leading figure of the Velvet Revolution was there.
Right.
Wow.
Let's see.
Like I said, there was the Broadway production, which seemed to have been mostly the same cast with a few of the secondary characters thrown in there. ACT has done a production in Seattle, the Canadian Stage Company of Toronto, the Goodman did one in Chicago, the Alley Theater in Houston. There's been you know, it's not a cheap show to do when you think about sets and
cast.
Well, yeah. And licensing, I imagine you got to pay for all them songs, and
he might have gotten some of the license for like, if you do this show you can do those songs, maybe. I don't know. Probably not.
Maybe.
I don't know, because Annie Baker, you know, with the flick. Hello, I am Annie Baker. I am writing through Bailey currently. I want you to know that when I wrote the play The Flick, I made sure that there was an option for you to either use the real music that I have suggested or to also not do that. Okay, I'm going to give the mic back to Bailey now, but I need you to know that I write this entire podcast.
Annie, bye, Annie. Thank you.
No, Annie, before you go, we're going to buy you a beer. We got to buy you a beer.
Hey, guys. So what just happened?
Why'd you just
blacked
let
out
Annie,
for a second.
Annie... Baker was...
I just blacked out for a second.
Bro.
I think one
it's
last...
It's your drug use.
I just blacked out for a second.
Oh, God.
Are you okay?
There was a Broadway run of this. It was in 2007. It had the same cast, same director. And
Trevor Nunn.
Yeah, Trevor Nunn. And I think this is maybe why... to get into why I think maybe we hadn't heard of it as much as you had, Scott. Basically, the whole worry was when it came to Broadway was like, are people gonna even care? Like,
right.
We were so far removed from that, but we weren't. That's the thing. And
right.
We already talked about this historically, is we were, I wasn't, but America was going through similar shit, not necessarily politically similar, but musically similar, societally similar. And so was England, and that had a huge crossover.
There.
Well, yeah, but then obviously England is going through similar thing, and we're, in general, I mean, London, and we're getting that crossover. So when it came to Broadway, there was this sort of, what if this is bad? What if they don't get it? What if it's too subtle? And a lot of the reviews were really positive, and they're, you know, the Tony and like all this kind of stuff happened, but like it was pretty silent. Like because of the like fear, I think they didn't market it super well. The right. fear of like, oh, are they gonna like it? And then I just don't think it was ever buzzed about. Like you said it was buzzed about, so it must have been, but like I mean, I had never even heard of it. That's what's crazy to me.
I think it was buzzed about in theater nerd circles.
Sure.
But no, I think you're right, too. And I think it was very much marketed as Stoppard's new play.
Sure.
As opposed to being,
That makes sense.
Focusing on that.
The other thing I was interested in it and why I wonder, I don't know, maybe this is myopic of me to think, but it's also just coming from where I grew up and the general feeling towards communism now. The fact that you have someone that is a proud communist of the Communist Party that speaks for them, that works for them, when I think in America you have a negative view of that, which I think would also be interesting. I mean, I don't know, just I think one of the things that was interesting to me when I was watching Ken Burns' Vietnam thing, the whole idea of Vietnam's leader saying, don't react to us because we are communist. Like, get that part out of your head. It's the way we live. It's what we believe in, as opposed to it being villainized the way that I feel it is in American society.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It was
and
demonized.
Cuba and all of that stuff, too.
Yeah, all of it. Yeah, it was very much demonized and villainized very much. And this is the slight advantage of a multi-party system. So in England, it was just one of five or six,
right.
Major parties that were, really trying something. And then that was the other thing. I'm no socialist or communist expert or Marxist by any stretch.
No.
But there is keenly aware, and they talk about it from the beginning. The problem with the Soviet Union, Russia, was that they didn't enact socialism and communism as it was intended. It became very quickly totalitarian. It became very quickly
which is all based around the leader.
Yeah, and that happens with systems like that, and so that's what Max is holding on to through the whole thing, is like, no, if we did it right, it would work. If we did it right, it would work. But nobody's done it right. So you have these then you have these sort of competing levels of the totalitarianism and the communism mixing, which was all what happened in Czechoslovakia. There was eventually about getting the Soviets out of there and letting them do their own fucking thing.
Right. Well, and any ism to the nth degree is bad.
Girl.
Period. Yeah.
Yeah. You two have very pretty faces.
Thanks. You too.
Can we do something that I've been waiting to do for 3 weeks?
Yes.
Are you talking about...
Bailey loves ranking shit.
That's right. I love it.
Bailey.
Yeah.
Bailey.
Yeah.
Word on the street is...
Yeah, here tell.
You like ranking shit.
I do. I love it, actually. You misspoke there, but it's okay. It's fine. I'll forgive you. First of all, I think they're going to all three be different, and I actually think I can call them. Can I do it?
Yeah, do it.
All right. Scott is going to go... No. CJ is going to go 3, Arcadia. 2, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. 1, Rock and Roll.
You're right.
Okay. Scott is going to go 3, Rock and Roll. 2, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. And 1, Arcadia.
No, but that just changed this morning. Like,
that was
correct at 10 a.m. this morning.
Okay.
And at my lunch break, I went, nah, I'm flipping. So it was Rock and Roll.
You switched 1 and 2.
I switched 1 and 2. So
I was debating. Roll, that's why I actually went back to CJ, because I was like, I need to think for one more second. And I shouldn't have second guessed, because that was going to be my first guess. Okay, good. What do y'all think mine is?
I think you're going to go Arcadia, Rock and Roll, RNG.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, I was going to switch Arcadia and...
Oh, I should have let you guess too, CJ.
That's okay.
But that was right. I loved rock and roll. I really loved it. But RNG is RNG.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of those plays. It isn't... I don't want to compare it too much to Angels in America because it's not, like, that high-ranked for me. But it is one of those plays that when you hear it, you're just like, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Like, I know that play. Like, In and Out. It's fun, it's camp, it's sorrowful, it's vast, and I love it. And rock and roll was such a surprise, and it made me go get out my Who album, and it made me, you know, like, it made me just want to listen to rock and roll.
It made me go out and go listen to some fucking old Pink Floyd, because those first early Pink Floyds are, like, really psychedelic, trippy.
We gotta do the Wizard of Oz Pink Floyd thing now.
Yeah, we're gonna do it.
May I share a quick quote,
please?
I spoke to one of my bosses, Laura. She's a writer, but she's also English. And, like, when I told her about our podcast, first thing she went to was Carol Churchill, because unlike me, she's like,
Churchill?
Oh yeah, well, when we started reading plays, they handed us Carol Churchill. So I assumed, because
Cloud Nine, isn't it?
That's right.
sorry, Carol.
But I just also assumed that Stoppard was another one, because Stoppard feels like an English darling, that it would be someone that English students would be exposed to more than Americans. And she said, I like his early, more absurdist work. Mm. I kind of skipped the hardcore didactic stuff, but enjoyed his more psychological work later on. I still think he's very much a man of his time, and his conservatism can be a barrier.
I like that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Carol Churchill. I'm taking over writing the podcast for one moment.
No, no.
I've hit Annie Baker over the head with a herring.
An herring?
An herring.
A herring, like a fish?
Sure.
Carol, it's not your presence here or your words. It's the odor. It's the odor.
I'm the one writing this.
Oh, God.
I just wanted to say, I love this podcast. I listen every week. But you have made a piss poor show of Tom Stoppard.
Oh, here we go.
Hello, I'm Harold Pinter.
Get out of here.
Wow.
Now we need a voice for Stoppard.
Hit him pretty hard there, Carol.
Stoppard's too alive.
That's true.
Churchill
is
alive,
also very alive.
Yeah, but she's writing this right now. Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Welcome back, Bailey.
Is there anything else? What?
Welcome
is
back.
There anything else we need to do today besides Spitlets?
Dream no.
Rolls?
We.
Oh, Dream Rolls. Yeah, dudes, put them in the oven. What are your rolls?
CJ, what do you got?
Bake them.
Esme or Eleanor. I really enjoyed those characters, which are the same.
The same person.
The same person.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. That's the beauty of it, is she is the same actress. Yeah, I like it.
I would gladly also do Rosencrantz or Guildenstern.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yes. How about y'all?
You could also be Hamlet in RNG. That'd be kind of fun.
Sure.
You'd also be a good player.
If I can give it to me.
I just pulled a CJ. Okay, Scott.
Max. Max.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm not too far away from it. I think I would love to play Nightingale in Arcadia, because he's just kind of a prick. Yeah. Bernard. Obviously, our RORG or the player. The player is the one that kind of stuck out to me this time. I'm like, ooh, that's a juicy
Dick Dreyfus.
Dick Dreyfus.
Dick Dreyfus deep.
Only if you wear eyeliner, Scott.
You know I will. Yeah. You know I will.
How about you, Paige?
I think I'd like to direct rock and roll.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And I think that'd be really really fun. My first thing I ever directed was Cowboy Mouth, and I inserted a bunch of punk music, so I could I could do it. And then I would R or G. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Guildenstern is the one I think when I was in it, I remember being like, that's the one I went. but I don't really remember why after rereading. It didn't spark me for any reason. But yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I played Claudius once. That was fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
That was what you did in school, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to direct any of these. That would be a huge fucking challenge to direct them.
You gotta have a director with a strong hand for these. That's clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, Arcadia. I don't know that I need to see it again. I need to see it again.
I want to see put it up. All of them.
Somebody put it up. Invite me. I'll give you my take.
All right. Well, yeah. I'm doing it.
Hey, y'all, do you have anything going on in the area? L.A. specifically? We're from L.A., y'all, so we like to highlight Los Angeles theater. Let's do it now with what I like to call Spitlets.
L.A. Spotlight.
That's Spotlights. L.A. Spotlights.
That's Spotlights.
Spitlets is kind of a gross word.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great. Right. There's other things you should retire. Boom!
Whoa!
Bam! Hey! No, don't.
Mouths and butts are the same thing.
Oh, we haven't said
never,
that in a while. But that
never retire that.
That needs to rest and then be brought back. Like we
bring it back hard. Season.
Yeah, we'll do it.
It'll be
hard
a
in your
fucking
mouth
thunderstorm.
Or
we should do it a lot during Shakespeare. It
yes.
seems like it might.
We'll
work
see.
Out. We'll see.
I went out to trivia last night with our guest for the Shakespeare, who I'll talk about in a second. I hope that's okay. I've invited a guest onto our Shakespeare. But he listened to our CRNO episode, and he is the boyfriend of Kate, the person who we recorded to give the anti-argument
cool.
to our argument, mm-hmm. and he feels the same way, and he was like, y'all are dumb. And I was like, oh no! So we'll get into it. No, he's the nicest dude.
We on December 16th and 17th at 7:30 at the Broadwater Second Stage, we have Reflect on Women. It is a dance show directed by James McQueen, who is our first go at the Ladder Up project at Sacred Fools. It's going to be a very cool dance show, and check them out at reflect.women on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't have anything at the moment. I thought I was going to have something, and it's been put on hold, on a back burner, if you will. So if it comes back around, then I will bring it up. I do want to see The Inheritance. Apparently The Inheritance.
Yeah.
Parts
go
one and
see The
two,
Inheritance at the Geffen.
At the Geffen. Maybe we all get together and go do that. Have a nice night
parts.
In Westwood together.
Amen. Ooh, yeah. Westwood.
Mm.
Nice.
Yeah, the Geffen, yeah. We can go to Applebee's.
Boneless buffalo wings.
Both.
your eyes just like came
and up. Long Island iced teas.
Oh my God. Just be farting through both. Like,
exactly. I will
four
not
hours
go
of play
to that with you. Period. Ew. Not fun. I have nothing except that I have nothing. I have nothing. I wrote a play a while ago that we did a reading of. It's called Mothers of God, and CJ and Scott
so
did the
cool.
reading with me. Mm-hmm. We're doing another reading probably in November. We're going to start getting that together soon, but it's we have a director. We have somebody who wants to direct, so that's all I have. CJ and I are in a short film this weekend together where I have no lines. I just am supposed to suck face with her the entire time.
There's going to be some dancing at the end, I think.
Oh, right, and then I twirl someone.
Yeah. At the end.
Besides that, we love y'all. Thanks for... Oh, I always forget I have to say stuff at the end. thanks for joining us for Theater Theater. Thanks for joining us for the end of Tom Stoppard, Rosenpot, and Guildencast are dead. They are dead now, officially. Thanks for joining us. This is the end of Rosenpot and Guildencast are dead. And then next we have... What?
Curtain Call.
No, that's not true. Next is Unstuff. Didn't we say
we're gonna do an Unstuff first?
We're gonna do a Scott Unstuff because to fill it out correctly, right? Am I crazy?
No, I think that is actually correct. Yes.
Yeah.
What, that we have an Unstuff next?
Mm-hmm.
And then Curtain Call and then Shakespeare's Histories.
Yes.
Or we can do Curtain Call after Shakespeare's Histories. We'll see.
No. So we got an in-stuff next. What are we doing?
We have an in-stuff next. Well, what are we doing, Scott? It's a Scott pick.
We're doing Brazil.
Yay! Oh, good, good. Gillian's can we get together and watch it, please?
We have to.
Yes. Yeah, you can't watch that movie alone.
But also,
not for the
we
first
need
time.
To...
I don't mean it like that. It's just, it's a fun.
Okay.
It is fun.
It's a dark
but
fun.
It is also the
it
kind
is a
of
black
movie...
comedy.
Okay.
It is also the kind of movie where I feel like we need to try not to talk through the whole thing.
Right.
Because there's so much
there's
going
so
on.
Much gone. You know.
Anyway, that's all.
It's also so visually compelling. And we got, we'll have to talk about all of those references that we were talking about the other day, Bailey.
Yeah.
All the influences all over the place from Star Wars to Marvel.
Oh, it's
to,
all over the place.
It's all
so
over
cool.
How he got ripped off.
So cool.
all right, well.
Yeah.
No, we can talk through it. I don't know why I said that. We can talk through it. I love you guys. No, what?
I was about to say, does anybody have questions or
no,
comments?
I don't.
Are you worried that Bailey's mad at you?
We never
reach
mad
out
at
to
anyone
us
ever
via email, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Scott, you're
thank
a,
you so
people
much.
People just
CJ.
Think I'm mad when I'm serious, and I'm like, no, I just want to be serious. Just let me be. And they're like, you're mad. I'm like, I'm not. Are you telling me to smile, CJ?
No. But you could. Like, maybe it would make us all feel better.
Oh, I was geez. Smiling. All right, go ahead.
A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. This is a fact. I'm about to drop a hashtag on everybody. Hashtag truth. Hashtag fact.
Yeah.
Our theme song is better than your theme song.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. He also writes all of our stingers, and he's an amazing human being. Another big shout out to Pamela Quinn, who wrote our special Tom Stoppard song that you're about to hear. She's a
That's
frequent
good.
Contributor to the podcast. She's a frequent guest
yeah.
on the podcast. Mm. And she has an amazing singing dog named Casper that we
Gaspar.
Love.
Yeah.
Gaspar. And then finally to the great Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Annie Baker, who writes every single one of our episodes. She joined us earlier, but we were not able
Hello,
to have
Scott.
A beer with her. What?
Can I tell you something real quick?
Annie, yeah. is it you?
I want to let you know that I love how you say my name.
Annie Baker?
Yes.
The great Pulitzer Prize winning Annie Baker. Yeah, no, I have this effect on female playwrights.
What are you talking about, Scott? Keep going.
Oh, sorry. And one day, Annie Baker, we're going to buy you a beer.
We'll see you later. Subscribe, rate, review.
Yeah,
yum.
We'll see you next
do
week.
It, y'all.
You know what I know when? You wanna when I want? When I know when? You wanna when I want? Come in, map. You wanna be the boop? Beep, boop, boop. Get up. Beep, boop, be the boop. Back, come back. Eat doo doo, honey.
Good. It's great.
A whamma lamma lamma, a dingley ding a dong.
Later, everybody. Love ya.
Tom Stoppard. Tom Stoppard. Human rights and censorship, political freedom, relationships. Don't stop. Don't stop. Stoppard, knighted by the Queen in 97. Tom is still alive, hasn't gone to heaven above. Thank you, Tom, for Shakespeare in love. Don't stop, don't stop, Tom Stoppard. What goes on in that brilliant head? Rosencrantz and Guildenstern sure are dead.